Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Leaders at Denver International Airport say the man who jumped a fence there, went onto a runway and got hit by a plane, had come there to die. They said today it was a suicide. Airport CEO Phil Washington says there was a three-minute gap between when the airport's radar system first detected movement near the perimeter and when the man scaled the airport's 8-foot barbed wire fence. Washington says the employee monitoring the camera did not initially notice the man walking toward the runway because the cameras had also picked up a herd of deer nearby and because the view was obscured by ditches. 2 minutes after the man made it over the fence, he walked in front of that Frontier Airlines plane approaching takeoff. The man was killed instantly, and the plane was evacuated after an engine caught fire. Washington says the airport is conducting a review to see how they could better monitor their 36-mile-long fence line, but he said that hardening that fence itself might not be an option.
Since this incident, we have been asked, why don't you electrify the fence? Or why isn't the fence taller? Or why don't you use razor wire instead of barbed wire? Safety and security, again, is always our top priority. We don't want our fence to be deadly. And even if the fence was taller, we believe a motivated individual could find a way to penetrate it.
Still a lot to learn about this. Denver police are investigating, so are the feds. They haven't figured out, or at least they haven't said, how that man managed to get to the far side of the airport. Officers haven't found a bike or a car near the fence. Now, we do know a little bit more about the man who died. We know that he had a criminal case dismissed last month because he was found mentally incompetent to stand trial. And his criminal history indicates that that same thing happened in 2020 as well. The Evergreen school shooting led to a bill to force social media companies to report when they take action over threatening posts. The bill's up for a final vote at the state capitol tonight. If it passes, Democratic Governor Jared Polis is expected to veto it. Mark Salinger explains why.
Months after the Evergreen High School shooting, a bill that aims to stop similar tragedies faces its final vote in the state Senate.
And I'm incredibly enthusiastic about its prospects.
Democratic State Rep Tammy Story represents Evergreen. The bill she introduced following the shooting would not only require social media companies to comply with law enforcement warrants faster, but also force them to report to police when they take adverse actions against a user over threatening posts.
The duty to report element is just as important as having the search warrant response time reduced to 24 hours.
Back in March, Democratic Governor Jared Polis celebrated the signing of a similar bill, requiring quicker response times to warrants.
It's everything from helping to track down stolen bikes and cars to helping protect the lives of Coloradans from dangerous drugs.
But House Bill 1255 goes farther with the duty to report element, and the outcome could be different.
I have very serious concerns about some of the constitutionality of House Bill 1255.
Republican State Senator Lisa Frizzell sponsored the bill signed into law in March. She's concerned Representative Story's bill goes too far.
Is it constitutional even? And that is the question that the governor is posing, and I myself and my colleagues in the Senate are posing.
Democratic Governor Jared Polis for months has signaled opposition to the bill being voted on today. In March, he told us House Bill 1255 would unrealistically demand social media companies act as a proxy for government surveillance, and it could violate the First and Fourth Amendments. If the bill passes the Senate, it heads to the governor's desk.
If the governor chooses to veto this, that is his decision. But the community is screaming loudly that they want this policy.
Story says it's about safety.
This is not government overextension because it's the social media platforms that are making decisions and identifying posts through their own process that have violated their own rules and policies.
Governor's office told me this evening that he is concerned that this bill will infringe on free speech. The governor's office has expressed that these concerns have gone to sponsors, but the bill was not improved.
He will review the final version of this bill, and if it reaches his desk, he'll review it and see what he does. We're expecting that final vote today, though it hasn't happened just yet. The final day of the legislative session, Kyle, is tomorrow.
Not surprising the governor would veto a bill to protect the tech industry, but, I mean, standing against the kids in the community there in Evergreen.
The way that this bill was originally announced was a press conference at Evergreen High School with Representative Story, with Congresswoman Brittany Pedersen, as well as the Jeffco Sheriff's Office and students who survived that Evergreen High School shooting. Those are the people that are in support of this bill.
Mark Salinger, thank you. A federal judge is ordering some ICE officers to go through retraining in Colorado. The civil rights group accused immigration agents of blatantly disregarding a court order that bans warrantless arrests. Judge R. Brooke Jackson found that some ICE agents in Colorado are violating his order from November, which blocks agents from making warrantless arrests unless they determine the person is in the U.S. without documentation and is a flight risk. The ruling is part of a class action lawsuit filed by the ACLU on behalf of four people who were arrested without warrants. That includes 19-year-old Caroline Diaz-Goncalves, who was arrested by ICE agents after a traffic stop on the Western Slope. Immigration advocates argue that these warrantless arrests are the result of racial profiling, that they're just meant to fill arrest quotas handed down by the Trump administration. In his order today, Jackson said that ICE agents have received insufficient training on how to comply with the court's order, and that some officers, quote, have an inadequate understanding of their obligations. So the judge is ordering all ICE officers in Colorado to go through new training and to provide additional documentation for arrests without a warrant. A jury in Douglas County just handed down one of the largest civil judgments in Colorado history, $24 million, for a man targeted in a false criminal case by Parker police. Robert Dials sued the former detective with Parker PD after he was arrested in 2022 on felony charges of tampering with evidence. The charges were dismissed 5 months after his arrest, but his attorneys argued the case led to him losing his job, the loss of his reputation. The case centered around Dials' son, who shot his roommates, killing a man, injuring a woman. His son called him and confessed to the shooting, and Dial told detectives that he hired his son a lawyer. The woman who shot told police that Dial told the son to hide the gun. The gun was never hidden, but the detective still accused the father of tampering with evidence. Yesterday, the jury found the detective liable for false arrest and malicious prosecution.
You can't arrest and charge somebody because they say, I got my son an attorney, I'd like to have an attorney involved. That's a constitutional right. And it's not only a right, it's a good thing to do.
Dial's son eventually pleaded guilty to manslaughter. The detective involved retired in 2024. Town of Parker says it's considering an appeal. Stories of gentrification and redevelopment in our city tend to come building by building or block by block. Tonight, our Anjali McCall tells us about a group that is stepping back to take a wider view of what's happening to the whole Little Saigon area at Federal and Alameda.
Some people may know it as the Federal Corridor. To others, this is Little Saigon.
This area is where I grew up. So just being a part of taking on our family business is really meaningful to me.
Mimi Luong is the owner of Trong An Gifts at the Far East Center off Federal and Alameda, taken over from her parents.
This area is a place that the Asian community feels comfort, and they feel like a place that is made for them.
She knows the struggle immigrant families have faced, and she's seen the neighborhood change. Changes reflected in a study done by Colorado Asian Pacific United.
Everyone really loves the area or loves the history of the area. There's a desire to preserve the cultural identity, and many people want to stay, but they just can't afford to.
Executive Director Joey Ha says the study took about 3 years, with findings about displacement to residents and businesses.
And we need to make sure that people are being protected and looking at things like zoning, legislation.
The study dives deeper into obstacles businesses face, like affordability and infrastructure.
It's important that business owners and people who are most impacted have an actual say in what that future looks like.
Through life, there's always going to be change. You cannot prevent change. To preserve is a different story. How can we keep these cultural traditions and businesses here?
Some of the recommendations of the study include launching a community advisory group, along with protections like guaranteed financial relief for impacted businesses during construction, like the upcoming bus rapid transit project, and even addressing public safety as businesses report heightened burglary and vandalism. And Kyle, we know from that BRT project on Colfax, that is something that businesses have really struggled. We've even reported that businesses can't stay afloat when, you know, these large construction projects, and so they know that this is also coming to their community and neighborhood too.
Yeah, understanding that, right, redevelopment, gentrification are just some of the threats that are posed to small businesses in our community, and this idea that if the community wants to save places, how do we do it proactively as opposed to like, oh, look, there's another gaping hole.
Right, because now is the time, right? Because at some point it's too late. And so that preservation conversation is something that they want now. And this is recommendations, but they're hoping that city leaders will take them up and also, you know, adhere to some of these advisements.
All right, we'll be watching. Angelina McCall, thank you. Suncor is getting a lot of scrutiny after its latest flare-up. But are we holding Colorado's biggest polluter to an unfair standard?
Oh, mountain bikers are upset.
They're just looking to squeeze bikes out.
Mountain bikers in Boulder not happy about the idea of splitting custody of their favorite trails. That's next. An ethics committee at the state capitol says a Democratic caucus leader's handling of their funds was a mess and probably an ethical violation, but not a crime. The committee's considering a complaint against Representative Mandy Lindsay from Aurora. A fellow Democrat filed the complaint, alleged that Lindsay frequently mixes the caucus funds and her own personal funds, writing herself a $6,000 check to pay for a caucus retreat, using the caucus credit card to book herself a motel room on a personal trip. Lindsay says some of the charges were a mistake. Other times, she personally fronted money for caucus expenses, then reimbursed herself. Bipartisan Ethics Committee met this week and said that Lindsay's poor accounting practices raised some concerns, but they don't think that there are underlying criminal violations. At this point, she has two choices. She can request a hearing where they go through the evidence, or the committee can just go ahead with a final report and a recommendation. The Suncor refinery is a real smoke show, and not in the complimentary sense, but we got to thinking this week, maybe we are being too hard on Colorado's biggest polluter for occasionally belching black and yellow smoke for our lungs to enjoy. Perhaps it is unfair to compare Suncor's emissions to other industries when Suncor is Colorado's only refinery. So we look to see, maybe Suncor's pollution isn't that bad compared to other refineries. Actually, it is. So nobody expects a refinery to be clean as a whistle, but in 2023, the EPA compared incidents and malfunctions at Suncor to 11 similar refineries across the country. And that analysis found that Suncor was far and away the worst for releasing excess sulfur dioxide and had the second most releases of excess hydrogen sulfide. The EPA said that the high rate of incidents at Suncor is likely due to their inadequate maintenance of their aging equipment and their outdated electrical system.
Suncor's got this long history of violations, right? But it doesn't pay very much for them. Honestly, Suncor doesn't have much of an incentive to invest in maintenance or upgrading its facility if it knows that it's not going to be held meaningfully accountable to for its violations.
All right, so what would be meaningful? The state hit Suncor with a $10 million penalty for repeated air quality violations in 2024. It was the largest penalty for a polluter in Colorado history, but it was $10 million versus Suncor's $2 billion in quarterly profit. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi is along now. And Chris, yesterday, right, everybody sees the black smoke. They see the firing there as they're burning stuff off. But yet the air quality monitors in the neighborhood were like, you know what? It's not that bad. It's not that bad. And we know why.
And Kyle, I was watching those air quality monitors religiously yesterday, and they did stay on the good side, at least in terms of the immediate pollutants there. The reason why is we had a steady southwest breeze, about 10 to 15 miles an hour. The most important part about it was steady. So it was taking that pollutant and moving it away and kind of dispersing it within the atmosphere. We saw mostly ground ozone pollution yesterday, which is our more typical pollutant here along the Front Range. We did have an ozone action day yesterday. Tomorrow, though, the big story, we're going to have a lot of ground ozone. The way ground ozone works is essentially gets baked into place on a warmer and sunnier day like tomorrow. So that's why we're going to have, unfortunately, probably an air quality alert tomorrow. 80s, 90s, Eastern Plains. If we get to 90 tomorrow, it'd be our first 90 of the year. and it would be about a month earlier than average for us along the Front Range. Now, tomorrow we will have a few showers and storms. In fact, our best chance for showers and storms this work week. It's a pretty limited threat, but a few gusty showers and storms around tomorrow, maybe lingering into early Thursday. Then it dries out for the rest of the week, but it will gradually cool off the rest of the week with temperatures slowly sliding down as the ridge high pressure moves away. Showers and storms move back in the picture for Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And if a storm system gets just far enough south, we could be talking about, hopefully, fingers crossed, some meaningful moisture on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Still a little early. We're right on the border of that storm system, but cautiously optimistic that we should hopefully get some meaningful rain Sunday and Monday.
When we return, Boulder considers telling mountain bikers to leave some room for everybody else. Hey, a reminder, you can catch Next streaming each night, 6 p.m. on 9 News Plus. And Next is a podcast for your ear holes. Mountain bikers in Boulder County want to ride those bikes on all the mountains. A new alternating trail use project may limit their options at some county spaces. Our resident mountain biker and photojournalist Mike Grady takes a closer look.
The only thing I don't do are full rebuilds on dampers.
Talk of dampers, derailleurs, and droppers is common at Redstone Cyclery in Lyon.
Wheel build on a Yeti.
Dave Chase owns this shop.
All kinds of fun stuff.
Maybe a little less fun when 9 News pops in.
Tell me about Boulder County's alternate trail use pilot project.
Ah, okay. It seems like they are looking to close trails to mountain bikers to make better experience for hikers and equestrians.
The pilot program is looking at trail use and open space managed by the county.
Also, he's going to talk to Claire today.
Claire Levy is a Boulder County Commissioner.
Yeah, we are piloting having 1 or 2 days set aside on certain trails for hikers and equestrians, and limiting mountain bike usage on those days.
Levy says new purpose-built trails for hikers or bikers are not an option.
I know that's what the mountain bike community is calling for, but we buy our open space primarily for habitat preservation.
They're all about closing trails, reducing, and that creates conflict.
It's not so much like conflict. It's the fact that you just, as a hiker, you don't feel as comfortable on the trail.
The county is still gathering data and exploring options, but Commissioner Levy expects the pilot to begin soon.
It'll be sometime this season, and then we'll maybe do some more survey data, see how people feel about it.
No doubt trail chatter will keep up as things progress.
What's the stoke level about this project amongst mountain bikers?
Oh, mountain bikers are upset.
Should be more opportunities in Boulder County for people who want to hike, who don't want to constantly be looking over their shoulder for a fast moving bike coming down behind them.
Maybe we can use this as a way to say, hey, let's do a better job actively managing our public lands versus just closing things off.
For Next, I'm Mike Grady.
So if you use the trails in Boulder County and you have thoughts, Boulder County has a survey online. They're also doing an open house starting at 5:30 tomorrow in Boulder. We have guests in the studio tonight, and you have feedback. Thank you so much. We're back with that next. All right, feedback here on the Suncor story. Jim writes, why isn't the metro area approach Suncor to relocate outside the metro area? He suggests the Eastern Plains. I'm sure there's factors involved in that that I could never even fathom, and maybe somebody out there could inform me about it, but I do know that Suncor just finished a big 15-year expansion of its pipeline down from Wyoming, right? It's Canadian tar sands, but it comes down through Wyoming, in which they spent a lot of time and expense upgrading their pipeline to increase or meet the capacity at Suncor. So I imagine that would be a problem if they tried to move that facility. Jeff in Castle Rock says, perhaps the $10 million in fines should be compared to the potential cost of the upgrades to fix the problem. I think you're onto something there. We'll look at that next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.